right. This is Christoph Kemper from Link Research Tools with the Link Building and SEO podcast. And I got a great new guest in the show. His name is Stefan Spencer. Stefan, who are you? What is your background and history? How do you connect to SEO, link building, link artists? What does your company do or your companies?
Well, that's a lot of questions all at once. Okay, where do we start? Let's start with in the very beginning, back in the 90s, I was a graduate student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison studying biochemistry, and I decided to drop out of my PhD and start an agency. So that was NetConcepts. I ran it for 15 years, and I sold it to Covario in 2010. So I had my successful exit, and I also, in the process, invented a technology platform for SEO that allowed us to charge on a cost per click basis. Very innovative at the time. I invented that in 2003. So we were doing cost per click on SEO using reverse proxy and charging 15 cents a click. And we had clients like Zappos and Nordstrom. Pretty amazing. Great. And so we were making a lot of money versus the consulting. I've like seven figures a year from one client in click revenue. Yeah, that was pretty fun. And so that was a big reason why my company, my previous company, NetConcepts, got acquired, was because of that technology called Gravity Stream. I also am the co-author of The Art of SEO. I have actually three books with O'Reilly. Google Power Search is another one, and Social E-commerce is the third one. So The Art of SEO is probably the one I'm most known for. It's in its third edition now, and it's nearly 1,000 pages. So it's a thick tome. It is the Bible on search engine optimization. So that's me in a nutshell. What else did you have that like you barraged me with questions?
That was a lot already.
Yeah, okay.
No, that was a lot already. And The Art of SEO, for those who don't know that one, I think, you know, we've been featured with Link Research Tools and Link Detox there in the second edition, or I'm not exactly sure when that started, especially now with all these 8 years. When did the first Art of SEO get published?
2009, yeah. So yeah, I think it was the first edition. It was the second for sure, and then, of course, the third. Never going to take you out of the book. So when we work on the fourth edition, which will happen this year, we'll, of course, beef up your link research tool section, because you guys have innovated. The last edition is from 2015. And it's still mostly relevant, but it doesn't include some things like AMP isn't in there, and Rank Brain and so forth. But it's still a great book. Yeah, I'm biased. Right.
Cool. Well, and I think you had Rand Fishkin as a co-author who also...
Yeah, for the first two editions. He dropped off for the third. He was just too busy. But yeah, it was actually in the speaker room at SES Toronto that... Rand and I started chatting about doing a book together, and that's where this all started. We were going to do the SEO cookbook with O'Reilly, and we started work on that together. And it all started when I spoke at the first SMX Advanced, and apparently I really impressed Rand. I've impressed a lot of people, giving away super awesome secrets in the Give It Up panel at that SMX Advanced. And then Rand comes up to me. I'd never talked to him before. Comes up to me in the speaker room a few weeks later at SES Toronto. Gives me a hug. I was like, wow, that's nice to meet you. That's awesome. And we just started chatting, and we decided, hey, let's do a book together. And then we contacted Danny Sullivan, who happened to be at Foo Camp at the time. Friends of O'Reilly conference, and he said, well, let me go talk to some of these O'Reilly folks since I'm here and see if they want to do a book with you. And they're like, you're in. So it was that easy. Within a few days of that chat, we had a book deal. Yeah. And then it became The Art of SEO. We teamed up with Jesse, and then I brought in Eric a year later to finish the book, because it stalled. So long history, but it's been a great labor of love. I think we probably collectively earned minimum wage working on it, but it's a gift to the industry.
Well, if you have this one product that uses reverse proxy to charge seven figures for SEOs per year, per client, or for a big client, and then, you know, you can afford to have some labor of love projects like this, right?
I suppose, but, you know, that technology is no longer mine. It belongs to Rio SEO now, which was the spinoff from Covario. So, whatever happened after 2010, who knows? Because I left shortly after getting acquired. But then, you know, I still do consulting. I work with clients, ones that are fun and interesting, and you know, challenges, mental challenges. Like I've worked with Chanel and Zappos again, and who else? Sony Store, Quicksilver, CNBC, Bloomberg Businessweek. Yeah, so those have been some of my clients post-acquisition.
Wow.
But let's not talk about me anymore. Let's give some value to our listeners, some ninja stuff that will blow their minds.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, you know, a tip, a takeaway that you can share for people doing SEO or maybe, you know, having a chance to acquire such large companies. Obviously, you have a lot of visibility by yourself and by your history and by your personality already. But, you know, on the one hand, the question is, you know, what kind of biggest issues to fix do you see in large companies where someone could step in, or vice versa? How can you get into big companies in the first place, you know, get someone to reach the right people to get your SEO and online marketing skills.
Yeah, so let's start with, if you are a big company or work in a big company, what are the biggest challenges? I think there's a lack of visibility into what is really going on. Like, for example, when I do a link audit, that's part of my comprehensive SEO audit. It's like three sections. You have the technical SEO audit, the content audit, and the link audit. And I'm looking for lack of diversity in the themes of the linking sites and the types of sites, the TLDs, top level domains, the power trust metrics, and all that sort of stuff. I'm looking for lack of diversity, because if it's not sufficiently diverse, it looks engineered, like you essentially bought those links or bought the services that yielded those links. So that is a very common issue where the client has no idea that these things are going on. I'll run a link detox, which is, of course, a great tool of yours, and allows me to triage and see what's going on. If you have a lot of toxic links or suspicious links that need to be reviewed, evaluated, then they've got visibility into this now. Suddenly they know that, oh, wow, this is an issue. We had no idea. So exposing all that and then setting up a roadmap or game plan for them to execute on, because it seems onerous and like a black box. Like, how do I deal with the fact that my like I'm in the red zone in link detox? I didn't even know that was a thing, you know. And so kind of breaking that down for them, providing a roadmap. And I always do like a 3-month rolling roadmap, so they know what at least the next several months are going to be focused on. And I try to focus not just on cleanup if there are issues. A lot of times these bigger clients don't have issues with cleanup. It's more like, let's find you better, more authoritative, more trusted links, high trust links, instead of just leaving it to chance or doing kind of the more basic fundamental sort of link building where you request, just getting into people's expert roundups and that sort of thing is not exactly amazing. So how do you up level? And so I teach them how to do that, how to create link building campaigns, content marketing campaigns, essentially, that that are link worthy, that have the potential to go viral. Like I had a successful campaign a while back for overnightprints.com, business cards for life contest that did really well, and you just have to find a hook or an angle. And in that case, the hook was that Jeremy Shoemaker, aka Shoe Money, very famous blogger and internet marketer, internet celebrity, was the MC or the kind of the spokesman of that contest. And the contest was focused on designing Jeremy's new business card. He loved the contest. He didn't charge my client any money to run it on his blog, and he promoted it on his YouTube channel and everything. And my client went from nowhere for business cards to number two.
Wow.
So it worked. Now, not every campaign is going to be a home run like that, so you have to kind of just do a rinse and repeat and essentially throw a bunch of mud against the wall and see what sticks. So I'd aim for at least a few content marketing campaigns a week. They could be really simple, like listicles and personality test quizzes, infographics, checklists, worksheets, cheat sheets, that sort of stuff that are easier to do, maybe a few hours of work, some good curation work, finding some stuff, videos to embed into a blog post and, you know, create a nice listicle. But you got more involved campaigns you got to do as well. So you got to mix those in, like the contests or competitions, scavenger hunts, all sorts of more involved things that might incorporate UGC, user-generated content, into the campaign, because then you'll get higher quality stuff if you get it en masse, and then you can cherry-pick the best stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a mix. Now, if you are targeting a big company and you want to get in, the best way to do that is to build your authority. The ways I've done that were through podcasting, like we're doing right now. So you can be a guest on other people's podcasts. I use a service called Interview Connections. Mm-hmm. There are multiple services that do this sort of thing. They'll either get you on podcasts as a guest, or they'll find guests for your podcast, and they charge a fee for that. So so that's a service that's great. You can have your own podcast, like you just started, and that's awesome. I'm a big fan of podcasting. It gives me opportunities to talk to really high profile people. Like, for example, I've interviewed Dan Kennedy, a godfather of direct mail. He's a big deal. Also interviewed Jay Abraham. I had Jay Abraham interview me as well. So that was an awesome episode. That's a great idea, by the way. Killer idea, Christoph, is if you can get somebody who is a huge name to interview you about link building and put that on your show.
Well, I could come to your show then, to your podcast.
Oh, I'm not that big of a deal.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is together. So Jay Abraham is kind of the godfather of marketing. He's a huge deal. He's amazing, and he's been around forever. So having an episode where I interview him is great. Just like that doubled my listenership, just that one episode. Granted, he did send an email to his big list promoting that episode, so that was really nice of him to do that. And about a year later, I had an episode where he interviewed me. So you have somebody, a big name like Seth Godin or Brian Tracy or somebody interviewing you, Christoph, and then you put that on your show and people are like, whoa, that's a big deal. And you that's great positioning. So anything that will build your authority positioning will help you get in as a potential vendor with these large companies. Speaking at conferences, I've spoken at thousands of conferences over the last two decades. And some of the best ones have included shop.org, Internet Retailer, Content Marketing World. There are a lot of them out there. And you just have to pick your audience and try to go after conferences where you're not just another of the same kind of vendor. So SMX is great, and you are just awash with all sorts of other SEOs. You go to something like Content Marketing World, and you're just one out of a very small number of SEOs at that conference. And if you're speaking, you stick out and you speak early in the conference, then you're celebrity slash authority for the whole rest of the conference.
Ah, okay. Got it. So it's basically going niche or going against the mainstream on that conference.
Yeah, so you got to be remarkable, just like, you know, Seth Godin says in The Purple Cow, is, you know, be worth remarking about. But you do this in the conference circuit. And so you speak at conferences where you are going to be the only, right? Not just another me too, but the only. If it's an SEO conference, you got to figure out a way to be the only there. So I know you were just at Brighton SEO. How do you be the only link builder or the only link technologist, or like you find a niche where you're the only there? Yeah.
Oh, that's actually quite interesting feedback, because on quite a lot of conferences, there are so many other different topics that link building got a lot more niche or a lot more specialized. You know, with all these years that we've been working in link analysis and link building, link detox, penalties, just, you know, in the last month, we launched so many new features that are for many users above their head, where I realize in customer success, in marketing, and in talking to customers, oh, wow, I didn't know that this was possible or required, or that this is basically new and the same is, you know. And so in a way, the specialization that we have anyways with links and link building seems to be, you know, naturally developing in a more special skill, if you want. You know, the same is true for outreach. I was about to ask you before, you know, for all your campaigns, how you do your outreach. And when I talk to people how they do their outreach, they usually say something like, Excel and then some Gmail and all that.
Well, I love Pitchbox. You know, I'm a big fan of Pitchbox. I recommend that to clients, and it's very scalable. It's kind of like a Salesforce.com for link outreach, and you can use it for other types of outreach too. But of course, for link building outreach, it's fantastic. You got the capability to build your prospect list in there. You can fine tune it so that it's a minimum threshold of like Moz rank or whatever your metric of choice is. And you can prioritize from the sites that it identifies and say, well, I don't want webmaster at to be the first contact in that company to outreach to. Let's put that at the bottom of the list. Let's put the director of marketing first, etc. And once you get your prospect list, you've got a template library there. You can write your own template, mail merge it with the template, and you can have you can kind of delegate or outsource to people to build that data repository that's going to be mail merged with, not just the name of the person and so forth, because that's handled by Pitchbox. But let's say that you want to have something insightful to say, so it's very clear that email was handwritten and was not just templated and blasted out. Well, that means you have to go to the site. You have to have something insightful to say that makes it clear that you have been to the site, that you are a human and a smart human. And not trying to just get something, and then always give before you get. So try to add value first, and don't ask for the link immediately. This is not a sprint. This is a marathon. So figure out ways that you can add value first. So for example, I just got a client just in the last 2 weeks. They had a full article about them in the Denver Post. Now, the only downside of this was the journalist would not link from the article to my client's website. But they've already gotten big deals out of this this article. It's all about the company and this grand opening of this building that they did. And it's an incredible article. And the way it started was I saw that there was a Denver Post article about apartments and the rising costs of housing a few weeks earlier before the grand opening. I'm like, hey, we got to respond to the journalist on this article. And my client sent me a draft. I'm like, this is not good. This just sounds like a veiled press release, a short one. No, you have to have something insightful to say and not seem like you have an agenda here. Just chime in. And so he came back with another run at it. I'm like, nailed it. And so that, we didn't use PitchBox or anything for that. That was a laser targeted, handcrafted email, but it worked. So we got on the radar of that journalist, and he said, "This is great." And he, my client, alluded to the grand opening in that that message, and so he put the journalist put my client in touch with another journalist who attended the grand opening and wrote this amazing article, and it's probably their best article about their company in all their history. So
wow,
this stuff can happen. You just have to be strategic about it instead of tactical. Tactics are great, but in the art of war, Sun Tzu said, "Tactics without strategy is the noise before defeat."
Well said. Well
said. So we got to be strategic about it, and you add value first, and amazing things can happen. So PitchBox facilitates this whole process, so you can do this en masse. You can kind of semi-automate, and you can scale it. You can't completely automate it because you still have to show that you've got a brain, and that you're not a robot. You're not a an algorithm. You're a human reader or viewer, and you've got something interesting, powerful, even to say.
Yeah, this is why we integrated with PitchBox over 3 years ago already. I remember using the first editions and went completely nuts with my campaigns. And it's also funny, you know, to hear when people complain about how this extra work is needed or the extra cost for the sophisticated solution is needed, not having this fancy result and actual impact of the work in eyes, and would rather go with a whatever $50 spam bulk emailing Windows app instead of that. And I think this is where, you know, this is also a good example of where you need to have, let's say, the perseverance or the endurance to go through a process of higher complexity to get to a better result in the overall end.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think the same is true for, you know, everything in SEO, which, you know, puzzles me sometimes how the big companies that we mentioned before are actually more short-term thinking than some, you know, small businesses that have their.
You know, it's that old adage, penny wise and pound foolish. Like, well, let's save a few dollars on some tools, and then we'll just do it the hard way.
We got to do this by hand.
Yeah. And then stuff gets missed. It falls through the cracks. Like with PitchBox, you can have it send an automated follow-up. 10 days, 14 days, or whatever you set it to. Like, okay, we didn't get a response. Let's send a follow-up. Like, hey, I'm about to hit deadline. I really want to include you in this article, but I'm going to have to turn it in.
Yeah. You know that I used PitchBox actually also for fighting trademark violations, you know, of Link Detox. When Link Detox was fairly new, like 2012, 2013, we got these trademarks, but we got all kinds of piggybackers and, you know, basically trying to copy the same thing. And some of them even, you know, had Link Detox, our trademark, our brand name in, you know, whatever, the landing page or the product. And using PitchBox and a proper sequence in there, I could even get, you know, people in Belarus and White Russian to stop doing that. And, you know, they, I think, you know, not even human rights are working in that country. So, trademark law. And that was my basically most impressive success from, you know, using the automation of PitchBox in different ways to different, you know, recipients over time. It's lovely, really lovely.
Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah, I've used it for getting ebook contributions for compilation ebook for clients, just all sorts of different things.
Or making people aware of our, you know, the browser extensions that we have, the Chrome extensions for link redirect trace and for the SEO toolbar that show all the LRT metrics. This was also quite an interesting use case, just to mail out people to show them, you know, that it's there. It's a tailored and very laser targeted promotion of, you know, free stuff, but, you know, with the intention of getting people to talk about it, to promote it. And that helped us during the launch last year as well.
Yeah, I think the trick, though, is to make it more relevant to their audience, because, yeah, that's relevant generically. But if their audience is, let's say, I don't know, industrial engineers, mm-hmm. and you provided examples where an industrial engineering company could use it to get more PR. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, this is highly relevant. Okay. Uh-huh. And uh-huh. It's not like you blasted this out to 10,000 companies.
No.
You have something very focused mm-hmm. on my niche. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit more work, because then they have to create it for all these different niches. But you'll get way more uptick from that, or, you know, you'll get more play from it. More people will say yes to featuring
uh-huh.
you.
Uh-huh. Well, in my case, you know, when we're talking about this free browser extension, it was easy because there were other browser extensions that were actually the reason why I built my own, because the other ones were broken and they didn't handle the rel canonical and HTTP headers properly. And they've been around for 5 years. So I just, you know, did a backlink profiler and link research tools, looked at who linked to that other extension and the company of that other extension, and just sent all of these people an email and saying, hey, I got something that is actually better. And the only reason I built it is because of this. You want to give this a try? So that was basically everyone who used that other extension already and, well, gave it a try. And so, you know, installs, crawled up really, really nice, really, really fast on autopilot, basically. And the links came, of course, with that.
So let's figure out how to take it on even another level up. Let's say that you wanted to get on TV with talking about your tools. Mm-hmm. See, now that's a whole other ball game. I mean, even getting in a major newspaper is hard, but TV. Mm-hmm. That's like, I had 11 TV appearances last year, and there's a whole process involved. Like, yeah, you're you know, cold calling, cold emailing TV producers, just like you would for, you know, webmasters, but mm-hmm. it's a different process, and you have to come in really strong and differentiate yourself and have a hook that is timely, that's local, that's even emotional. Like, for example, the hook that made it timely. Like, I got on Good Morning Arizona last year, which is, Phoenix is a top 20 market. So it's kind of a big deal to get on TV in Phoenix. So this is a morning news show, Good Morning Arizona. And I cold called them. I cold called the TV producer, followed up with an email with the segment proposal. I had to have a great hook. I had to make it timely, make it local, and have something that was engaging beyond just timely and local. Like, oh, I got a new book out. It's just been released. I'm on a book tour, and I'm going to be hitting your city. So it's timely, it's local, but there's no emotional hook. So one of the emotional hooks is, I'm going to transform your host on TV live, and I'm going to turn them into the ultimate geek. I'm going to bring all these gadgets. I'm going to bring my Comic-Con costume, the, you know, Iron Man Patriot costume that I wore at Comic-Con, and we're going to make your host the ultimate geek. With like a sleep tracker strapped on their forehead and all this other stuff. And they loved it. So that emotional hook made for great TV. So how do you, Christoph, take this idea of, like, you've got this great set of tools, but it's not going to be of interest to a general audience on TV, but mm-hmm. it will take your business to another level if you get lots of TV appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, trust me on
that's
that.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Let me think about that.
Okay.
Wow. Oh, man. It's. I think we're talking for 29 minutes now. And
Yeah.
This is like yet another chat that went way beyond my you know, time budget, where I tried to keep this short and sweet on 10 and 15 minutes. Maybe, you know, to wrap this up, just one favorite trick or tip or golden nugget that can make our listeners rich overnight, you know, filthy rich and beauty and whatever, you know, a life hack, something as a giveaway. Because you mentioned the sleep tracker. Sleep is super important. We had this conversation.
Okay. So one of my go-to resources is, vendors and experts, consultants, and so forth are a backbone to any business, because we can't be expert at everything, mm-hmm. right? So
yeah.
If you have a process for finding amazing people and amazing companies, so I'll start, for example, I might ask on the Facebook group Internet Marketing Super Friends for recommendations on a vendor in a particular area. Let's say, I don't know, infographics or explainer videos or whatever, right? So I get all these recommendations, but then how do I screen these folks? Mm-hmm. What I do, I have a whole process. Oh, and I also will put out, if I'm looking for like a full-time person or something, I'll put out a job advert on different city Craigslists and then some other places as well. But I include a riddle in the job advert, which cuts down on a lot of the noise. A lot of the riffraff won't bother responding to the instructions and following and solving the riddle. And if they don't solve the riddle, then it's just automatically deleted. I have a process where there are trick questions inserted into the interview if they get to the interview stage. So there are trick questions there. I even have a document of trick questions. If you're looking to hire an SEO, use these trick questions. They're amazing. and it's a great starting point for creating other trick questions too, if you know a few things about SEO. Now, if you are an SEO and you're going to, you know, get interviewed, then use the opposite. Like, make sure that you stand out from the rest, become remarkable compared to the other people that they're interviewing by offering these answers that only you could answer, right? So, like, for example, I'd asked, what's your favorite SEO tool? And no, they didn't say link research tool. So that was already a strike against them. But then they said Majestic. And then, oh, okay, Majestic. Tell me a bit more about Majestic. Like, for example, what's the metric that the main metric they use? And I was kind of leading the witness here, right? So, and he took the bait and he said AC rank. I'm like, okay. So the interview was already over. He just didn't know it, right? Because it's Trust Flow and Citation Flow and has been for years. Yeah, and he just blew the interview. So this is your favorite SEO tool, and clearly you haven't been on there for a couple of years, since you're talking about a metric that's been deprecated like 3 years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's. Well, we got to wrap this up here pretty quick, but
no, you can come again. I think I'll have you again in a future episode if you want.
Oh, good. I loved it. So I made the cut.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, then wrap this up. I say thank you very much, Stefan Spencer, Art of SEO. And we're going to talk more in a future episode. All of you at home or in the car listening to this, wish you a wonderful day or night or weekend. My name is
Chris. Wait. Do you want everybody to have a free gift? A free gift?
Yeah, you have a free gift?
I have a free gift. They're going to love this.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So it's bit.ly, so bit.ly / CM chapter.
CM chapter.
And guess what this is? This is the content marketing, aka link building chapter of the latest edition of the Art of SEO Free.
Oh, sweet. That's the fourth edition then.
No, the third edition. The fourth edition is still in my head.
Got it. Okay. All right, that was great. That was a great giveaway. Hype-free data rich, loaded with insight that is essential reading for anyone who needs a deep understanding of SEO, says Seth Godin. So that's That's something. Well, thank you very much for that. And yeah, now again, you guys have a great weekend with this. And thank you very much, Stefan. And looking forward to having you again.
Of course.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, everyone. Bye-bye, Stefan.